Hello, everybody. This is Gerald Celente, and it's Wednesday, September 11th, 2024. And once again, we have with us a man of men that nobody could come close to when it comes to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, or Bill of No Rights, I should say. When we have this article, Judge Andrew Napolitano. And Judge, thanks so much for being here, and thank you so much for what you're doing.
It's a pleasure. Pleasure, Gerald. It's a bill of temporary privileges. Like a water faucet that the government turns on when it wants and turns off when it wants.
Yeah, it's so. Yeah, each week you write these articles, and you have a new one coming out tomorrow. And it's week after week about how they're. This isn't the America that our founding fathers fought for. It's AMERIKA, America, USSA, because this is the article you have here. Free speech in the Department of Political Justice. In 1966, two famous Russian literary dissidents, Yuli Danio and Andrei Sinyavsky, were tried and convicted on charges of disseminating propaganda against the Soviet state. The two were authors and humorists who published satire abroad and mocked Soviet leaders for failure to comply with the Soviet Constitution of 1936, which guaranteed the freedom of speech.
Believe it or not, the Joe Stalin Constitution guaranteed the freedom of speech. It wasn't much of a guarantee. The article begins with that because the American government condemned this prosecution. They were found guilty of anti-Soviet behavior and sentenced one to 5 years, the other to 7 years at hard labor in Soviet prison camps in Siberia. Then the wife of one of them got her hands on a copy of the transcript of the trial, because these were secret trials. And it turned out it was all about propaganda. It was just about expressing political opinions contrary to what the Soviet leadership wanted. That's what provoked an outrage in the West, including a condemnation by Arthur Goldberg, the former Supreme Court justice, who was then the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Why do I start with this? Because we are seeing it all over again with the indictments that came down in the past couple of weeks against Dmitry Symes and his wife, a Russian citizen and an American citizen who lives in Russia and works for a Russian television station, is being prosecuted for that work by the Department of Justice because they don't like the opinions he expresses. Canadian and American media owners being prosecuted for hiring American social media influencers to express pro-Russian views, being prosecuted because they're expressing pro-Russian views. Whatever happened to the freedom of speech?
Again, it is week after week. You keep going on with this. You call it department. By the way, with all due respect, it's not the Department of Justice. It's the Department of Injustice?
Well, you know, the phrase, the Department of Political Justice, I stole that from the late, great Bill Sapphire, who used to write for the New York Times. And mockingly, when Reagan was running against Carter, referred to the DOJ as the Department of Political Justice. I use that phrase because this is a political prosecution. These people would not be the subjects of indictment and prosecution if they were expressing opinions consistent with the Biden administration. But because they condemn what Biden is doing in Ukraine and condemn what Biden is doing in Gaza, and because there's foreign money involved, that's the hook on which the government hangs its hat, they're being prosecuted. This is all an effort to stifle speech that the government hates and fears. It is very, very little different from that prosecution for speech in the Soviet Union in 1966.
Well, that's what I call it, the USSA, the United Soviet States of America. We become that country in so many different ways. And you're talking about freedom of speech and what they've done. Look what they did to our friend Scott Ritter.
Right. Well, in Ritter's case, he's obviously being targeted because he, too, very articulately and with the verbal equipment of footnotes, meaning he states his sources, has attacked the Biden administration policy in Israel, Gaza, and in Ukraine, Russia. For that, they invaded his house. And of course, when they did, there were 40 FBI agents, three of whom were a SWAT team, three of whom, this is absurd, but it's true, a bomb squad. And during the course of interrogating him, he voluntarily agreed to chat with them in his house. They took out two huge loose leaf binders, which consisted of written copies of all of his emails and texts. No warrant. So it was either a warrant issued by the FISA court, which is not based on probable cause of crime. It's based upon probable cause of communicating with a foreign person, or they hacked into his computer in order to get that, which is, of course, a felony for which they, the very human beings that were there, prosecute people. They don't care. They don't care about the freedom of speech. They don't care about the Fourth Amendment. Sometimes the actual agents that are doing this are decent human beings that are doing what their bosses tell them, but their bosses are the ones raised in the, today's 9/11, raised in the post 9/11 George W. Bush, Dick Cheney era, which is forget about the Constitution, get the evidence first, worry about the Fourth Amendment later. A whole generation of federal agents has come of age with that attitude. And this stuff culminates in the type of prosecution of Dmitry Symes and his wife and the others whose names I don't even know, that was announced by Attorney General Garland and FBI Director Wray last week.
Garland, what a clown boy, Garland. What an arrogant little nothing. And you know, you mentioned Scott Ritter again. Scott Ritter, Judge Napolitano, Max Blumenthal, Anya Parampil, and others are going to be speaking at our Peace and Freedom Rally on September 28th up here in Kingston, New York. So please come up here. Scott wants to get 1 million people so we get the message out that we need peace. You know, look at the cover, Judge, of this week's magazine, the Trends Journal. It really says it all. The politicians want war. The people want peace. And it's a powerful, this guy that did this article, this illustration, boy, it could not be more powerful or
wow, accurate. I've never seen a mouth like that.
Well, it's the war mouth.
Yes.
Yeah, and we've heard it and we see it. So the judge is going to have this interview comes up tonight at 6 p.m. The judge will have Scott Ritter on today at and you go to Judging Freedom. The people you have on, Judge Napolitano, that every day almost, that are talking about what in the world is going on regarding the geopolitical landscape, there's nobody that you have on. Nobody has what you have. And the people,
well, the mainstream media, just like it doesn't want you or me on, even though we both were for many, many years, does not want Scott Ritter or Max Blumenthal or Anya Parampil or Doug McGregor or Larry Johnson, those guys that I have on. They don't want them on.
No.
As we speak, the Secretary of State of the United States, Tony Blinken, whom Professor Mearsheimer refers to as Netanyahu's lawyer, and his counterpart in Britain, new in the job and name escaping me, are meeting with the former president, because his term of office expired, of Ukraine, of Vladimir Zelensky. And they are probably telling him that Prime Minister Starmer and President Biden will authorize him to use British and American long-range missiles to attack deep into Russia, which means Moscow. What does that mean? That means that the United States and Great Britain will be waging war on Russia. What does that mean? That means expect a response.
Yeah. And again, World War III has begun, and it's just going to keep escalating. And what, look at Blinken. You know, in all due respect, Judge, he's much better than us. I mean, his daddy was the ambassador to Hungary, and my uncle was the ambassador to Belgium, and I went to Dalton, and I went to Harvard. A little clown boy of nothing. A little arrogant piece of lying scum crap. How many times did the bullshit come out of Blinken's mouth about the peace deal going on? Peace is very close in the Israel war. Only for about 7 months. And what does he blame? He blames Hamas for not making the deal happen when it's a total lie, according to Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, and we put it in the Trends Journal. It's Netanyahu that doesn't want the peace deal.
According to McGregor and Ritter, everybody involved in this, the American negotiators, the Middle Eastern negotiators, all know that there will be no ceasefire, and it's all because of Netanyahu. Meaning, whenever Hamas agrees to what's on the table, Israel will up the ante by adding a demand, often a demand of something they've already conceded, because Netanyahu cannot afford, in a domestic political sense, a ceasefire. Once he agrees to a ceasefire, the right-wing fanatics in his government coalition leave. He doesn't have a majority in the Knesset. He will not be the prime minister. He'll be back in the defendant's box in an Israeli courtroom. He'll be subject to the not only Israeli prosecution, but the Israeli public, and he'll lose.
Yep. Again, where they make up this, we have to protect, we need more land. The Philadelphia corridor over there. Well, isn't a nice name for it? Philadelphia corridor.
I don't know the origin of that name, but it's more land that the Israeli government stole. Some of it stolen from the Egyptians. You would think that President al-Sisi wouldn't allow this to happen, but so far he is.
Well, that's because they're making deals with America. That's why. Could you imagine if the Arab countries united against Israel and they did what they did back in 1973 when they put an oil embargo on? They're not doing that. The oil embargo changed everything. So again, Saudi Arabia is buying more weapons from the United States. So it's they're just, you know, they could care less about the people being slaughtered. Judge, they had the debate yesterday, the great debate between, who is it, Minnie Mouse versus Donald Duck?
Very clever.
And what's your take on it?
I thought Trump, and I say this as somebody that's known him and liked him for many years, looked and sounded like he hadn't slept in a week. And I thought she very adroitly kept him on the defensive from the very beginning. Now, the person who wins the debate doesn't always win the election, but I thought she clobbered him. Lindsey Graham, with whom I rarely agree on anything, told my friends and former colleagues at Fox that the debate was a disaster last night, that the debate was a disaster for Trump. What did you think?
Oh, it was terrible. All of this, and going on, off and on, and spewing out stupid crap like over a million people have been killed in Ukraine. What are you talking about? Not that a million people haven't been killed in Ukraine. And again, he comes out with this baloney of what he's going to do, but doesn't say how he's going to do it. And on the Israeli front, you know, calling her a Jew hater, and this, it was moronic. It was imbecilic.
And then this nonsense about people eating dogs. I mean, it was just horrible, disgusting, out of place. And he doubled down on it because he heard it on a television show somewhere. It manifested a level of intellectual immaturity that one really has to second guess is this disqualifying for the presidency. He has his supporters. He has people that love him. My right-wing friends this morning are saying that she had earrings on that were transmitters and her people could transmit to her through the earrings. This is ridiculous. This is their way of recognizing that she clobbered him, but they're looking for a way to justify it.
The term you came up with, intellectual immaturity. That's brilliant. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
You know, our magazine, the Trends Journal, back in May of 2016, said that Trump was going to beat Clinton.
Right. But nobody else was saying that.
And we only call it's not what we like, what we want, what we wish for. It's what is. We're trend forecasters. The reason why Trump won is because he sold himself as a anti-establishment candidate. And people had had enough of the Clintons. That's why he won. And we took out the trademark when Trump ran in 2016, presidential reality show. Because that's all he was. And that's all it is. And he lost his show is over. It was good at a certain time. It's not working now.
Agreed. That is a far better analysis than Lindsey Graham's, but it's true. The shtick of anger doesn't work anymore. I mean, no. She was happy and forward looking, and he was growling, snarling, and miserable.
So here's the deal: it's a reality show, and she'd been coached by Oprah, just like Obama was. She knew exactly what to say, how to say it. She had all the facts down. She studied this thing out before she went on stage.
Agreed. And he engaged in no prep because of his view of himself that he doesn't need to prepare. Well, last night was a classic example of what happens when you don't prepare, and the other side did. She had a game plan. She followed it. She had him on the defensive from minute one to minute 89. What was his game plan?
It's only about him. You know, he's so narcissistic, and that's what you can't tell him anything.
Oh, you can't. I've tried, as you know.
Yep. So, Judge, we had made a forecast back in, I think it was the last week of July, that Harris was going to beat Trump. The first ones to say that. And what was one of her major issues? Again, it's not what you like, what you want, what you wish. It's what is. We said abortion's going to be one of the big downfalls for the Republicans. It happened in 2022. They should have wiped out the Democrats, because when you look at the polls back in 2022 in the midterm elections, Biden was way down in the polls, and so was the economy. The people wanted a new direction. But they kept hitting the anti-abortion stance. And that's when Harris first came out, and we said she's going to run for president, and abortion is going to be a key issue.
Right.
It's right there. This is 2022. We wrote this. You look at the headlines today, like from CNBC, the first thing they have is abortion.
Well, listen, I'm pro-life, but she did a number on him on abortion. And part of this is because for him, abortion is not a moral issue. It's a political issue. If it were a moral issue, he could give a principled moral defense of his own view. But because it's a political issue, one week he's in one position, the next week he's in another position, whatever his pollsters are telling him. For her, for all of her faults, it's a moral issue, and she is consistent and articulate on it.
And you only have to go by the numbers. 67% of Americans are pro-abortion. Again, just go by the numbers. She's going to get the woman vote. And now that Taylor Swift came out, whew, that's like, remember when we were young guys, there was a guy by the name of Frank Sinatra?
Remember when he endorsed JFK?
You got it. You got
Except
it.
That Taylor Swift has 238 million followers on Instagram.
And you remember the power, what happened when Sinatra came out.
Yes.
But what people don't know, the other part of the story, is that how Sinatra did so much to get JFK elected. And then JFK was supposed to come and see him in California. And Sinatra even got a landing pad built so the helicopter could land. And then JFK backed out. And then his brother, RFK, started that whole mafia thing.
Right, right.
So they screwed over Sinatra. But
don't forget another person involved in that trilogy, Marilyn Monroe.
Yep.
God, Gerald, you're bringing back the old days. Yeah.
God, I'll never forget. I was in Catholic school in those days, and everybody was so pro Kennedy. But going back to the election now, minus a wild card like a market crash, we're forecasting Harris is going to win big.
Mm. Well, I think she's going to get a tremendous bump from last night, and she just has to maintain that momentum. He's probably going to get more and more angry and more and more bitter.
Yep. And the people are miserable already. They want some high note. They want to feel uplifted.
Correct.
Again, you can't. Let me tell you how. Again, you know my background. I worked on major political campaigns in Westchester County.
Right.
To the secretary. I designed and instructed a course called American Politics and Campaign Technology, how to run political campaigns. And I taught it at St. John's University. I know this stuff. I grew up in it. Anyway, every day, almost, I'm getting mail to vote for Trump. I'm in New York. There's no way in the world that Trump is going to win New York State. It's
what a waste of money.
Total waste of money. And the reason I hit it so big and so fast in the political world is because they're the dumbest pieces of jerky scum they could find. The people that get involved in the political world can't find a job in the real world.
Yeah, yeah.
They're the dumbest people I ever met. And, you know, I quit. I quit this when I was up in the sun. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to suck my way up to the top. They don't have a clue what they're doing. They're going to lose big time. So, Judge, going back to what do you think's going to happen with the Israel war? What do you see happening next?
Only force will stop the Israelis. Only force, a coalition of resistance, or the Israelis overextending themselves, taking on Hezbollah. But reason and morality will never stop them. They have no, their leadership, I'm not talking about the Israelis, I'm talking about the Zionist government, has no reason and has no morality. And because of Netanyahu's unique political situation, he can't afford to stop the war. More death, more destruction, more slaughter, financed by the Americans.
Yeah, just stealing our tax.
If Netanyahu is a war criminal, then so is Biden.
Yep. Again, Netanyahu is a slime ball that came to America, the Congress, back in 2000, that started selling the Iraq war.
Correct. Where'd that get us?
Yeah. And again, today's 9/11. How the world changed after 9/11, the war on terror. Yep. Hey, remember when it used to be fun to fly?
Yeah, yeah. The pain in the neck now.
Yep. The whole world changed. But look out. Homeland Security. They've been so wonderful. Oh, they didn't exist before 9/11. And how many hundreds of billions of dollars have we pumped into that clown show? As the country's rotting in front of our eyes.
Right. Right.
We need peace on earth, and we're doing everything we can to make that happen. So please come to our rally on September 28th. It's coming up soon. up here in Kingston, New York, Judge Napolitano, Scott Ritter, Max Blumenthal, Anya Parampil, and others. And very important, go to Judging Freedom. The people that Judge Napolitano has on his show, you're not going to hear anywhere else, any place, anyhow. Judge, thanks for being here, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Gerald. All the best, my friend.